Can you tell me about Stepan Bandera? Who was he, this controversial far-right Ukrainian revolutionary?
There are at least two Stepan Banderas. One is the real person, and another is mythology that really comes with this name. The real person was a young student, nationalistically oriented student in the late 1920s and early 1930s in the part of Ukraine that was controlled by Poland, who belonged to the generation who regretted that they were not born in time for the big struggles of the World War I and revolution at that time. They believed that their fathers lost opportunity for Ukraine to become independent, that a new ideology was needed, and that ideology was radical nationalism, and new tactics were needed. So Bandera becomes the leader of the Organization of Ukrainian Nationalists in Ukraine at the young age and organizes a number of assassinations of the Polish officials or members of the Ukrainian community who these young people in their 17, 18, 19 considered to be collaborators. He is arrested, put on trial, and that's where the myth of Bandera starts, because he uses the trial to make statement about the Ukrainian nationalism and its goals, and suddenly becomes a hero among the youth, Ukrainian youth at that time. He is sentenced for execution, for death, so when he delivers his speech, he knows that he probably would die soon, and then the sentence was commuted to life in prison. Then World War II happens. The Polish state collapses under the pressure coming, of course, from Nazi Germany and the Soviet Union. Bandera walks away. They work together with the Nazi Germany at that time with the hope that Nazi Germany would deliver them independent Ukraine. First days of the German attack, Nazi attack on the Soviet Union, the units formed on the basis of Organization of Ukrainian Nationalists march into the city of Lviv and declare Ukrainian independence. That was not sanctioned by the German authorities. That was not in German plans. So they arrest Bandera, members of his family, his brothers, members of the leaders of the organization. So his two brothers go to Auschwitz, die there. He was sent to Sachsenhausen for most duration of the war until 1944, refusing to revoke declaration of Ukrainian independence, which again contributes further to his mythology. After the war, he never comes back to Ukraine. He lives in exile in Munich. So between 1930 and his death in 1959, he spent in Ukraine maybe up to 2 years, maybe a little bit more, but most of the time was either in the Polish prison or in the German concentration camp or in exile. But the myth of Bandera lived, and all the members of the Organization of Ukrainian Nationalists and then the Ukrainian Insurgent Army that fought against the Soviets all the way into the early 1950s, they were called Banderites. They were called Banderites by the Soviet authorities. They were known also in that way to the local population. So there was a faraway leader that barely was there on the spot, but whose name was attached to this movement for really liberation of Ukraine at that time. Again, the battle that failed.
The fact that he collaborated with the Nazis sticks. That label just stays, that he's a fascist, he's a Nazi.
This label is certainly promoted by the Soviet propaganda and then by Russian propaganda. It works very nicely. If you focus on the years of collaboration, those were the same years when Joseph Stalin collaborated with Hitler. We have the same reason to call Stalin Nazi collaborator as we have the reason to call Bandera Nazi collaborator. Look at the situation in the Pacific, in Indonesia, in other places. The leaders who worked together with Japanese with the idea of promoting independence of their countries after the Japanese collapse become leaders of the empire. So the difference with Bandera is that he never becomes the leader of empire, and immunity that comes with that position certainly doesn't apply to him. But there are other parts of his life which certainly put this whole thing in question. The fate of his family, his own time in the German concentration camp certainly don't fit the propaganda one-sided image of Bandera. In terms of him being a hero, that's a very, very interesting question, because he is perceived in Ukraine today not by all, and probably not by the majority, but by many people in Ukraine, as a symbol of fighting against the Soviet Union and, by extension, against Russia and Russian occupation. So his popularity grew after February 24th, 2022, as a symbol of that resistance. Again, we are talking here about myth and mythology, because Bandera was not leading the fight against the Soviet occupation in Ukraine, because at that time he was just simply not in Ukraine. He was in Germany, and you can imagine that geography mattered at that time much more than it matters today.
Clarify, was there a moment where Bandera chose Nazi Germany over the Red Army when the war already began? In the list of allegiances, is Ukraine's independence more important than fighting Nazi Germany, essentially?
The Ukrainian independence was their goal, and they were there to work with anybody who would support and in one way, or at least allow the Ukrainian independence. So there is no question that they are just classic nationalists. So the goal is nationalism is the principle according to which according to which the cultural boundaries coincide with political boundaries. So their goal was to create political boundaries that would coincide with the geographic boundaries in the conditions of the World War II, and certainly making deals with whoever would either support, as I said, or tolerate that project of theirs.
So I would love to find the line between nationalism, even extreme nationalism, and fascism and Nazism. So for Bandera the myth and Bandera the person, to which degree did he hate Jews? Was he anti-Semitic?
We know that basically in his circle there were people who were anti-Semites, in a sense that, okay, we have the texts, right? We know that. We don't have that information about or that sort of text or that sort of evidence with regard to Bandera himself. In terms of fascism, there is very clear, and there is research done, that in particular Italian fascism had influence on the thinking of people in that organization, including people at the top. But it is also very important to keep in mind that they call themselves nationalists and revolutionaries, and despite the fact that in 1939, in 1940, in 1941, it was very beneficial for them to declare themselves to be Ukrainian fascists and establish this bond not just with Italy, but with Nazi Germany. They refused to do that. And then they refused to recall their independence. So influences, yes. But clearly it's a different type of a political project.
So let me fast forward into the future and see to which degree the myth permeates. Does Ukraine have a neo-Nazi problem?
My understanding is there are Nazis in Ukraine, and there are supporters of white supremacy theories. But also my understanding is that they're extremely marginal, and they're more marginal than the same sort of groups are in Central Europe, maybe in the US as well. And for me, the question is not whether the Ukraine has it, but why, even in the conditions of the war, the radical nationalism and extremism and white supremacist is such a marginal force, when in the countries that are not at the war, you look at France, you look at, again, it's not exactly Nazis, but really right, radical right is becoming so important. Why Ukraine in the conditions of the war is the country that manages relations between different ethnic groups and languages in the way that strengthens political nation. So for me as a scholar and a researcher, what I see is that in Ukraine, the influence of the far right in different variations is much lower than it is among some of Ukraine's neighbors and in Europe in general. And the question is why. I don't know. I have guesses. I don't know answer. But that's the question that I think is interesting to answer. How Ukraine ended up to be the only country in the world outside of Israel who has a Jewish president, who is, my at least understanding, is the most popular president in history in terms of how long his popularity goes after the election. So these are the really, from my point of view, interesting questions. And again, we can sort of debate.
So just for context, the most popular far-right party won 2.15% of the vote in 2019. This is before the war, so that's where things stood. It's unclear where they stand now. It'd be an interesting question whether it escalated and how much. What you're saying is that war in general can serve as a catalyst for expansion of extremist groups, of extremist nationalistic groups especially, like the far right. And it's interesting to see to what degree they have or have not risen to power in the sort of in the shadows.
So no nationalist or nationalistic party actually crossed the barrier to get into the parliament. Yes. So Ukraine is the country where there is no right or far right in the parliament. We can't say that about Germany, we can't say that about France, so that's just one more way to stress this unique place of Ukraine in that sense. And the year 2019 is the year already of the war. The war started in 2014 with the annexation of the Crimea. The front line was near Donbas. All these groups were fighting there. So Ukraine, maybe not to the degree that it is now, was already on the war footing, and yet the right party couldn't get more than 2%. So that's the question that I have in mind. And yes, the war historically, of course, puts forward and makes from the more nationalist views and forces turn them from marginal forces into more central ones. We talked about Bandera and we talked about Organization of Ukrainian Nationalists. They were the most marginal group in the political spectrum in Ukraine in the 1930s that one can only imagine. But World War II comes and they become the most central group because they also were from the start go, they knew they had the organization, the violence was basically one of their means. They knew how to fight. So historically, wars indeed produce those results. So we are looking at Ukraine. We are trying to see what is happening there.